long night, twilight.
Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So what really happens when a virus, you know, upgrades its primary weapon?
Right, it's a huge question.
Yeah, and back in early 2020, there was this tiny change, like just one single amino acid, that made the global coronavirus 4 to 9 times more infectious.
Which is just a staggering jump.
It really is. But the mystery was why? Because this change happened physically far away from the part of the virus that actually attaches to human cells.
Exactly. It wasn't at the contact point at all.
Right. So it makes you ask, how can a tweak in one part of a biological machine instantly trigger a faster reaction in a completely different part?
And how could this change our whole understanding of viral evolution, really?
Exactly. So our mission for this deep dive is to explore the invisible, lightning-fast physical movements that make these variants so contagious.
Because addressing that physical distance, that gap, is really the crux of the issue here. We have to stop looking at viral sequences simply as static strings of letters.
Right, they aren't just code on the page.
No, not at all. We have to start analyzing them as dynamic, three-dimensional mechanical structures, where motion in one domain cascades into another.
Today, we celebrate the work of Fiona L. Kearns, Rami E. Amaro, and their extensive collaborative team spanning institutions like UC San Diego, the University of Pittsburgh, UC Davis, and Penn State, who have advanced our understanding of SARS-CoV-2 spike protein dynamics and infectivity.
It's just a phenomenal effort by that whole team.
Truly. So, to understand the mechanics here, we kind of have to look at the baseline state of the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein, right?
Yeah, because the spike doesn't just passively bind to a human cell. It has to undergo this massive physical transition from a closed conformation to an open one.
Okay, so in that closed state, what's happening?
Well, in the closed state, the receptor binding domain, or RBD, is tucked down. It's basically shielding its binding motifs from your immune system.
So it's hiding.
Exactly. But to successfully infect a cell, that spike has to swing upward, exposing the RBD so it can lock onto the human ACE2 receptor. It is this highly coordinated mechanical movement.
Got it. And by March 2020, the D614G variant had pretty much outcompeted the original Wuhan strain to become globally dominant.
Right, that was the big shift.
Yeah, and that mutation swapped a bulky, negatively charged aspartic acid for a really small neutral glycine at position 614.
Which is key. But position 614 sits in the S1 subunit, which is located roughly 75 angstroms away from the actual receptor binding interface.
Which, I mean, in structural biology, a 75 angstrom gap between the mutation site and the functional site is huge.
It's a massive distance, biologically speaking.
Right. It strongly implies an allosteric network, you know, a system of internal linkages transmitting structural shifts across the protein.
Yes.
It's kind of like an automatic umbrella, right?
Well, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, like you press a little button on the handle, which would be position 614,
mm-hmm.
and then this whole complex series of internal springs and wires causes the canopy, the RBD, to just pop open way up to the top.
That is exactly what's happening. But mapping an allosteric network of that scale, it requires observing the protein actually in motion.
Which isn't easy.
No, not at all. We are talking about tracking a conformational change that happens on a timescale of fractions of a second. Standard molecular dynamics simulations just, they really struggle here.
Because they calculate the physical forces on every single atom, right?
Exactly, at intervals of just a few femtoseconds. Simulating a rare, large-scale opening event using standard methods would monopolize a supercomputer for decades.
Decades, wow.
Yeah, and that's without even guaranteeing you capture the actual transition.
So how do you even observe a microscopic motion like that without just waiting around for decades? I mean, logistically, how did the researchers bypass that computational bottleneck?
Instead of running a single continuous simulation and hoping to catch the opening event by chance, they used something called weighted ensemble, or WE molecular dynamics simulations.
Oh, okay. And they ran that through a platform called WestPA, right?
Right. The weighted ensemble approach is incredibly efficient for this exact type of problem. It relies on a rigorous statistical mechanics framework.
So you kind of guide it.
Kind of.
Yeah.
You define a progress coordinate, which is essentially a mathematical pathway from the closed state to the open state. As the simulation runs, it generates multiple parallel trajectories.
And the algorithm monitors these trajectories, right? Like, if a simulation branch starts making actual progress along that coordinate toward the open state, the system duplicates it to explore that promising path further.
Exactly, it rewards progress. And if a trajectory wanders off into a dead end, or if it falls back into the closed state, the system just prunes it.
But it maintains the correct statistical probability weights for every path, so the underlying physics stay strictly accurate.
Yes, the physics are completely sound. And to optimize this even further, they implemented a minimal adaptive binning, or MA, scheme.
Minimal adaptive binning, what does that do?
Well, instead of the researchers manually guessing where the bottlenecks in the protein's movement might be, the MAB scheme dynamically adjusts the focus.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, it constantly identifies the leading edge of the conformational change and concentrates the GPU computing power exactly where the protein is struggling to transition.
Which brings up the sheer scale of the data here, which is just wild. To map the transition pathways of the ancestral strain, the Delta variant, and the Omicron BA.1 variant, the team generated over 149 microseconds of aggregate simulation time.
It is a staggering amount of data.
Right. I mean, they ran these calculations continuously for 2 months, utilizing up to 112 A100 GPUs simultaneously.
Which is an immense computational load. But gathering that computational data is really only half the battle. They didn't just rely on the computers.
Right. They had to prove it physically.
Exactly. They validated these simulated flexibility changes using empirical, real-world experiments on actual virus-like particles, or VLPs.
Using hydrogen-deuterium exchange mass spectrometry, HDXMS.
You got it. HDXMS.
So for our listeners, with HDXMS, you introduce the viral proteins to a solvent containing heavy water, where normal hydrogen is replaced by deuterium.
Right, and the amide hydrogens along the backbone of the protein will naturally swap out with the deuterium in the solvent.
And the rate of that exchange tells you what exactly?
It depends entirely on the protein structure. If a region is tightly folded or physically rigid, it is protected from the solvent and the exchange is incredibly slow.
Okay, so it blocks the heavy water.
Yeah. But if a region is loose, flexible, or exposed because of a conformational shift, it rapidly takes up the heavier deuterium.
So then you break the protein apart and run it through a mass spectrometer, and the researchers can measure the exact mass shifts of specific peptide sequences.
Precisely. And the mass spec data physically proved what the WES-PA simulations predicted. The D614G mutation specifically altered the structural flexibility of the spike protein right along the pathways connecting the base to the binding domain.
That is so cool. So the simulation and the experimental mass shifts isolated the exact mechanical linkers.
They did. They identified this complex, hidden allosteric network. The simulations revealed two distinct physical pathways acting almost like internal biological tendons to pull the spike open.
Tendons, I like that.
Yeah. First, there's the known N2R linker, a sequence of amino acids bridging the N-terminal domain to the receptor binding domain.
And the second one.
Second, the study characterized a parallel pathway moving in the opposite direction, which they termed the R2N linker.
Okay, and these two tendons run directly past position 614.
Exactly where the mutation happens.
Right, and in the original ancestral strain, the structural arrangement there creates a pretty severe mechanical bottleneck. At position 614, the aspartic acid forms a salt bridge, a strong electrostatic bond with a lysine residue at position 824.
Right, on a neighboring protomer. And that D614K854 salt bridge, it acts as a microscopic parking brake.
A parking brake.
Yeah, the bond physically pins the local structure down, creating intense steric congestion right over the R2N linker.
So it's basically a traffic jam. Yeah. The structural overlap completely jams that specific communication pathway.
Totally jams it. And the consequence of that jammed pathway is really visible in the simulation data. The ancestral virus spends 44.5% of its time trapped in the closed state.
Wow, almost half the time it's just stuck.
Exactly. It continually attempts to open, but the kinetic energy hits that salt bridge and just dissipates. All the structural signaling has to force its way entirely through the single N2R tendon, making the opening process slow and highly inefficient.
So the original virus was essentially trying to open while stuck in traffic.
Exactly.
But then the D614G mutation fundamentally resolves that inefficiency.
It does. By swapping the negatively charged bulky aspartic acid for glycine, which is the smallest amino acid and lacks a side chain entirely, the virus just abolishes the salt bridge.
The parking brake is removed.
Gone.
And without that bond holding the structure together, the steric clash evaporates. The local region becomes highly flexible, which aligns perfectly with those heavy mass shifts recorded in the HDXMS data.
Right. With the congestion cleared, the virus gains access to a dual-lane communication system.
So it uses both tendons now.
Yeah. In both the Delta and Omicron variants, the structural signal to open flows simultaneously through the N2R linker and the newly freed R2N linker. The kinetic energy transfers efficiently, allowing the receptor binding domain to spring open significantly faster than in the ancestral strain.
This really shifts our understanding of viral dominance. It proves mechanistically why the virus got more infectious.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, the success of these variants isn't solely derived from binding affinity, you know, how tightly the virus grips the ACE2 receptor. It's heavily driven by kinetic efficiency.
The physical speed of the machinery.
Right. The biological machinery itself is physically optimized to deploy its weapon faster.
And the researchers took this structural analysis even further by analyzing the distinct opening mechanics of the Omicron BA.1 variant. They uncovered a profound conformational departure from earlier strains.
Oh, yeah. Omicron doesn't just open faster, it opens further, right?
Much further. The simulations captured a highly extended conformation they termed the peel state.
Wait, like peeling an orange?
Kind of, yeah. In the standard open state, the RBD shifts upward. But in Omicron's peel state, the domain extends so dramatically backward that its center of mass physically drops downward toward the N-terminal domain.
That sounds crazy for a protein.
It exposes entirely different facets of the protein's geometry.
But wouldn't shifting a structural mass that far alter the physical forces acting on the protein's base? I mean, extending into the peel state should, theoretically, completely destabilize the hinge region.
You would think so, yet Omicron remains structurally viable. The sequence data and the simulation show that Omicron evolved a compensatory mechanism.
Another mutation.
Exactly. A completely novel salt bridge between lysine 856 and aspartic acid 568.
Oh, so it introduces a new electrostatic clamp to replace the stability loss by extending the domain so far backward.
Yes.
That's amazing. The virus drops the old parking brake to gain deployment speed, but then adds a new tether to prevent structural collapse under the strain of the peel state.
It is a remarkable demonstration of evolutionary biophysics, and the implications of this hyperextended peel state are immediate for clinical research and immunology.
Because it changes the shape.
Right. When the RBD drops its center of mass and pulls backward, it exposes the underside of the domain.
And these are cryptic epitopes, right? Regions of the viral structure that are normally buried and hidden from the host's immune system.
Exactly. Most of our early neutralizing antibodies and the vaccines designed to elicit them target the top or the side faces of the RBD, assuming a standard closed or open conformation.
So if Omicron is frequently occupying this peel state prior to binding, those standard antibodies might encounter a structural landscape they just cannot recognize or effectively bind to.
Which is why mapping these extreme conformational states is absolutely essential for predicting immune evasion and for designing the next generation of therapeutics that target these previously hidden surfaces.
Okay, but to properly contextualize all these findings, we also have to examine the methodological constraints the researchers documented, because analyzing a system this dynamic has to come with built-in limitations.
Oh, definitely. Particularly regarding the physical experiments. The spike protein is heavily glycosylated. It is covered in a dense shield of protective sugar molecules called N-linked glycans.
Right, and those glycans are critical for the virus to evade the human immune system. But I imagine they also complicate structural assays.
Very much so. During the HDXMS experiments, the heavy water must physically access the protein backbone to exchange isotopes.
But the sugars get in the way.
Yeah, the density of the glycan shield blocks the solvent from reaching certain peptide sequences, leaving gaps in the experimental mass shift data.
And the computational approach has limitations too, right? It requires defined parameters that inherently limit the scope of discovery.
Yeah, because the weighted ensemble method is incredibly efficient precisely because it doesn't just calculate random motion.
Right. The researchers had to define a specific two-dimensional progress coordinate to tell the algorithm what transition to track.
Exactly. And by heavily weighting the simulation toward that predefined pathway between the closed and open states, the algorithm aggressively prunes trajectories that deviate.
So it might miss things.
It does. It means the simulations likely filter out slower orthogonal conformational changes, you know, motions happening laterally to the main opening mechanism.
But even so, the robust alignment between the simulated allosteric network and the available experimental data strongly validates the core mechanism of the linkers.
Without a doubt.
So just to sum up everything we've talked about today, what is the major takeaway here for you?
I would say that the D614G mutation fundamentally reshaped the internal communication networks of the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein by removing a microscopic roadblock. This allowed the virus's receptor binding domain to pop open significantly faster, explaining its global dominance, while newer variants at Omicron have evolved even more extreme opening mechanisms like the Peel state.
What does this mean for the next generation of vaccines? And could we eventually design drugs that act as artificial parking brakes to jam these viral communication networks before they even start? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now, stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base. Long nights, white light, and a restless screen. I watch a hidden hinge in the in-between. One tiny swap where the currents run, and the whole locked door learns to come undone. A clasp lets go, the tension rewrites. Signals travel like city lights through quiet linkers, line to line. The map of motion starts to shine. When the bridge breaks, the window swings wide. A faster opening on the inside. One small change, but it changes the game. New shapes to see, new targets to name. We ride that wave where the meanings live. When the bridge breaks, the virus learns to give. Pathways humming back and forth, a message threaded from south to north. What used to stall now slips on through, flexing the backbone, opening queue and later versions. Hold on tight with different knots in the folded night. Somewhere a peel reveals a different face, a turn of the mask, a new kind of space. What's open changes what eyes can meet, what hands can block, what shields can be. So we trade the dance, note by note, to build the answers we can devote. When the bridge breaks, the window swings wide. A faster opening on the inside. One small change, but it changes the game. New shapes to see, new targets to name. So light the lab, let the rhythms live. Bridge breaks, we learn what to forgive.